This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond just talking about faith to living it. And we all have in our Western culture a great resource. Sometimes it can also be a detriment. And that's these major motion pictures that are being released around the country. One of the great benefits last year and this year has been a great number of really good Christian films. And one of them is coming out right around the corner, April 24th, called Little Boy. We have with us on the air Bruce Salvati, the father of the protagonist, Jacob, who might be joining us shortly. I met both of them at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention a couple months ago. I was very impressed by them, and I was able to watch a pre-screening of the film. I strongly encourage you to go see this movie. It will warm your heart. It's really the story of a lad who will do anything to bring his dad home alive after World War II. It's a story of faith. Bruce, I think it's a God story. Tell us about, you know, how you all got involved in doing a film.
Well, the professional story is that Jacob was tagging along for Joshua, his older brother's audition, and was asked to come in and audition. And 9 auditions later and a screen test, he got the film. But the real story behind it is that actually his older brother Joshua is autistic and was there because of his autism. He wasn't there to become a famous actor. A woman at NRB had stopped me, and it was the only negative experience I had in the whole convention. She stopped me, and seeing that Jacob has this, you know, line of people waiting to take a picture with him and autographs and the success of the movie, and she says, "Are you sure this isn't his mother's dream?" And, you know, I just politely and humbly corrected her that when Joshua was young, the autistic older brother, he was non-responsive at age 4, and they tested him. Somehow they determined that his savants were perfect pitch, musical ability, and photographic memory, but his social skills were not there. So they asked us to get him involved, you know, in the industry, reading lines and socializing with people, and that's why we did it. And we would take him to as many auditions as we could. We lived about an hour from L.A., and Jacob would always be tagging along, and he was only a year younger. And so he would get the audition. Leslie would take him into the audition, and he would book it. He's been booking things ever since he was 4.
So this movie for Jacob, he was, some of the reviews I read talk about 7, some 8, but he was right there 7 to 8 or so as you began filming?
He began filming it in August. He was 7 and turned 8 the day after production stopped.
That explains it. Wow. For how long did it take?
In 3 months.
Oh, 3 months. Okay.
They filmed it where they filmed the Titanic.
And now he's 12. Is that right?
No, he's 11.
He's 11. But it gives all of us a sense of what it takes to move beyond filming a movie to marketing and getting it out there. Everything involved, all the steps. It takes a few years.
Well, you know, this director and Metanoia Films, the whole purpose behind their films is exemplary. It's all God. Bella, Alejandro Monteverdi's first film, the director, has inspired over 2,000 women to send emails in saying that they did not abort their child because they saw the movie.
Wow.
So the purpose of the movie is not to be glorifying the writer or the director or the story or the plot, but it's to bring humility and to serve God. And that's what we loved about this film and do and continue to love. There's something that Jacob said in an interview that was, you know, out of the mouths of babes. It was profound. That this movie has, you know, a chance, has the ability to change the world. And it really does. It opened your heart. You've seen the film, right, Doctor?
Yes, I have.
So I like that about the company. I like that about the production aspect, about every aspect of the film. And the director is so brilliant. He's a genius, and he's so picky that I'm not surprised it took them over 3 years to edit this film into where they were happy with it.
It is really well done. It's a kind of story that as you get into it, you think, okay, where are they going with this? Maybe it's too obvious, you know, and suddenly, no, I don't quite know where they're going. And the message itself, even at the end, it's kind of powerful and yet subtle.
Oh, well stated.
Yeah. So tell us a little more about the journey of filming. That must have been an upheaval in your family life, huh?
It was. Being a pastor at a small Bible church in Norco, California, Grace Fellowship Church, I was my senior pastor, Bernie Fletcher, was kind enough to allow me time off with my family to leave the country. What I would do is I would simply, you know, work on the computer from Mexico and then drive in on Saturday night, do Sunday services, and basically my apprentice would run the rehearsals because I'm a worship leader. And that carried on for months and now has gone on to all the other things that we're doing connected with the movie. He's afforded me that time, and I was allowed to keep my job, my position. And so we're very grateful on many levels. And, you know, back to the film, I'm sure you noticed it, but the whole film is shot in Norman Rockwell. And that's something that I think that a lot of people miss. Talking about how beautifully done the film is.
You know, I didn't realize that, but I can see it just thinking back.
Absolutely. Every scene, yeah. Look at it, and it's beautifully done. I will be surprised, not because we're involved with the film, but because the film is so beautiful, and I'm such a movie buff. Mm. I will be surprised if this doesn't take major awards for cinematography, wardrobe, et cetera.
It was about, $20 million, I guess, in production costs.
I think it was just under 30.
Okay.
And they had mentioned that doing it at Baja Studios, they were able to really do a $100 million movie for their budget of just under $30 million.
Wow.
Because they had, the help was, the regulations there. You asked me about the film and filming it.
Mm-hmm.
It was rigorous. It was tough. You know, there was 200 people around him all the time trying to change him and do makeup and get to talk with him. And, we were in a foreign country, and the hours are different, so he worked long hours, by choice. He would rest, and then he'd go back and say, well, we want to do this night scene. If he could do it, he'd do it, They were wonderful the way they treated us, and it was an enjoyable, blessed experience the whole time. But it was tough for a 7-year-old to focus like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next. I was really impressed meeting Jacob, and now he's 11, very mature young man. I'm just really impressed by him. You both sang in front of this huge convention. He poured his heart out in song. And then meeting him personally and seeing how mature he is and respectful and of other people, and he's got a winsome spirit about him. What was it like when he was 7? Was this a real stretch for him, or did it come naturally?
Came so naturally. It's got to be from God. His mother, who is the selfless person of the world, most wonderful, giving person in the world, is his only coach. He went through acting lessons and stuff at a young age because he was a tag-along again for Joshua. We thought it would help him develop, and which it has. Mm-hmm. He's come out of his autism, and he's high-functioning Asperger. Jacob was, he's a brilliant soul. He teaches at the church, teaches for the junior high, and the kids there, teaches Bible. He knows the Bible. And he's just always the first one up in the morning saying, hey, I want to help you do something. I want to help you work, something. Anyway, he had that ability very much then. He was a very sensitive soul then. And I'm happy to see that his singing and his Christ-like attitude and walk has continued.
Did the very process of doing this film help him to grow? Did it stir his faith on some level?
And tested it. Yes, both.
You talk about testing. Did you sense his father and really a spiritual covering over him in this process? Did you sense spiritual warfare?
The whole time. It was, I don't want to go into it, but it was in-depth and personal for all of us. One thing that they had was they had the breastplate of righteousness and, right there, because they had pastors and priests on set all the time. They just stayed there. People could go take communion if they were Catholic. You could go pray in chapel with pastors. Myself being a pastor, I was praying a lot. And one funny part of the movie, which, when you give a kid that's 7 license to stop and cut and say, I have to go to the bathroom and all that, then he starts to take liberties. And one day there were, you know, there's 150 to 200 people on set and all these cameras and lights and everything, and they're looking for Jacob. They can't find him. They're ready to roll tape. And it's in the morning, and the director goes and finds him in this little closet area, and he says, Jacob, we're all waiting for you. You know, time is money. He says, well, you know, I've got a prayer. It's not going to go right.
Wow.
Jacob down on his knees.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's heartwarming.
Wow. You know, this, as people go to see this movie, having listened to us talk about it, I think they'll appreciate it all the more. So are there parts of the movie, let me bring one out, but my real question is, are there parts of the movie that you want to highlight a little bit so we'll appreciate as we get to those parts? But I was shocked to read that the great earthquake actually occurred in California months before Hiroshima. Tell us a little more about that. I mean, it's just a pretty amazing scene.
Well, yeah, that is a pretty dramatic scene. There's a lot of different character conflicts at that point with Hashimoto. There's prejudice, race prejudice, war prejudice. You know, there's all the different levels that Pepper, who's Jacob's character, Pepper Busby, he's trying to triumph over being bullied and father not being there, and then a kind of a over-aggressive brother. David Henry plays that character brilliantly. Oh, my goodness. Mm. And Terry Tagawa was amazing as Hashimoto. I'm floored. When I see these people again, Emily Watson, Tom Wilkinson, you know, Kevin James, when I see these people again and all the other actors, I just can't wait to tell them how humbled we were to be there, you know, just to be working with them.
I love the Hashimoto parts and just the whole theme of young Jacob, I'm using his real name, loving people that the world is telling him, you can't love that Japanese, he's tied to the war. You know, any more on that? That how did it impact Jacob, you know, going through that whole experience on the screen and with the script?
Well, you know, these children are homeschooled. They're raised in the Bible. They don't speak slanderous words. You know, they don't swear. And so he didn't want to really say some of the derogatory terms for Hashimoto, Japanese terms that are mentioned in the movie. And, you know, we had to sit him down and say, well, you know, the movie's message is good. So this helps facilitate the outcome and the end of the movie, and so you need to do it, you know. So once he did that, and then he started joking around with Terry Tagawa, he started being more comfortable with that realm. Mm-hmm. You know, I did want to thoroughly answer your question about the mountain scene.
Okay.
That is such a pivotal point in the movie, because the mountain moving brings his personal battle into public. Mm. Now all these other people see that faith can move mountains, and you know, it's a biblical concept, and it's well told, you know, very well weaved. But that point there is where the movie really pivots, and then you're curious. You're saying, does this kid have, you know, these psychokinetic abilities, or is this kid, you know, tuned into God, or is this just chance? What's going on? So it's a great movie to grab you. I mean, you know, the movie grabs you from the beginning, but at that point, you are so hooked. That's a great point of the movie. I'm glad you mentioned it.
It really is. And then he puts his hands up. It's just the whole connection with the war and him longing to bring his father home. And then his father is apparently gone, dead, you know, and I thought that was really important in the movie, that there is no simple answer here, because life doesn't offer us simple answers.
Even at the movie, you don't know what's going to happen. Like you said it yourself, it's very unpredictable, which is it's a great aspect of a film. How many films, especially these days, I'm not talking about Gone with the Wind and the old films, I'm talking about like these days, how many films can you walk in the first 10 minutes, you know the whole thing and how it's going to end and you're done?
So Jacob has just come in to join us. Jacob, thank you for being on this interview. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege.
Well, it was a delight to meet you. I was just really impressed, Jacob, by your boldness to sing in front of that big group of people and to declare your faith in God. I can't tell you how much that moved me. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you just a few questions so the listeners can kind of hear your perspective and be just excited about getting out to see the movie, or if they've seen it, they're going to understand a little more from the inside, you know, story, even from your heart. what was involved behind it. When you first started this filming, you were seven, just turning eight. Was it shocking? Was it scary for you? What was it like to suddenly be behind the camera and have all these people around you telling you what to do?
Well, at first, the first day, I was so overwhelmed, and I thought to myself, this is not for me. This is too big for me. I'm only 7 years old. I mean, I'm not even eight yet. This is too big for me.
Hmm. And did the process of having something too big for you cause you to trust in a God who's even bigger on some level?
Yes, very much.
Wow. Your dad told a story of when one time they were looking for you. I hope you don't mind my saying this, but they found you in a closet or somewhere, and you were praying, and you said, well, I have to pray or it's not going to go well. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, that is so touching. That's a picture of life. I have to pray or it's not going to go well. Do you think things you learned from this experience, that you'll just kind of carry it with you the rest of your life?
This is the biggest movie I've done yet, and it's amazing to be in it.
Jacob, one thing I love is you just have respect for other people. It shows a humility. It's easy for us to get a big head when God uses us in a big way. And here you've got this movie that's going to be seen by millions of people. I pray that it's seen by multiplied millions. I pray that it touches many lives. But does it get to your head? Does it make you feel proud and maybe kind of a bad way or no problem with that?
It makes me feel proud, and it's also hard to stay with God while you're doing it.
Yeah, it's hard because when you get really busy, is that why?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to stay with God, and you feel like you're above everyone else.
Yeah.
Overcome.
Yeah, people say, it's been said, it's harder to succeed than it is to fail. It's more difficult to be in a limelight and be the big star because it can get to our heads and it can be a kind of a troublesome thing. So, Jacob, I was just kind of asking if there's someone that kind of keeps you humble. As you're in a limelight, that you're just another little boy, that you're human like the rest of us.
Yes, I would say God and my family and my dad especially because he's always there for me. And God, he's always there for me. I mean, he's never away. He's never sick off his job, never gone. He's always there with me, no matter what.
Can you tell us what was maybe the scariest moment or just something you remember, a real experience that you want to share, you know, as you're spending those many months behind the camera?
One of the scariest experiences was actually off camera, and me and Hashimoto were in the car, and we were parked on the hill, and the brakes broke, and we were rolling down the hill, and I'm like, stop it, do something. I mean, that was one of the scariest parts of filming the movie.
Wow. Did you feel awkward when it starts with a scene and a table and a magician, but when you started those things where when you're trying to use powers, what was that like for you, that experience of having to do that?
I thought if I try hard enough and if I have enough faith to do this, I can make it possible. I can do it with God.
That's beautiful. So what do your friends think about this whole thing? What do they say to you?
They're happy to be my friends, and they feel privileged that they're with me and that they're with God also, because all of my friends are Christians, and I don't have any friends that are not Christians, and they just feel privileged to be able to be with God and be with me and be with my family, because we're all with God and they're all with God and we're all together.
Jacob, yes, on the 24th of April, this film will be seen by so many people. What do you want us to pray?
I would pray that everybody leaves the theater thinking they can be the best of their ability and thinking that they can leave the theater making their list and doing it every single day of their life, because this movie will make you a better person.
It will. Well, I really want to thank you for giving those months of your life to do it. Did your schoolwork suffer as you were working hard on being the movie star?
No, it was actually very easy to overcome school while I was doing it because I had an amazing teacher.
That's great. Do you have any thoughts or hopes about the possibility that you'll do another film, that you'll be involved further, you know, in the film industry?
I hope it involves God, and I hope that everyone can come to God by the movie, and that it does. It's not just a movie for entertainment, but for other things too, for making you a better person.
Yes, thank you. Did your experience being an actor make you, did you enjoy it? Do you hope to do more of that?
Yes, and I know it's all in God's hands, and I just hope that every movie I continue to do includes him.
Well, Jacob, you did a wonderful job, and we know God gets the glory, but thank you for being his instrument, for being there. I'm going to close out now, and so maybe we can try the speakerphone again and just give some final words. Yeah, Bruce, why don't we let you both give a final word to the listeners who are hearing this and are going to go see the movie. What final words would you want to say?
Well, the power and impact of this movie is, it's all positive. It comes from positive, and it leaves you wanting to be a better person. That's what Jacob says on a lot of interviews, because that's his own words. I just hope that this movie will impact people's lives, you know, and impact the industry, because we see so much violence and stories that are not uplifting. And this is such an uplifting story. It's an impactful story that has the ability to change the world. So that's my hope and prayer, is that this movie reaches, you know, every soul and sparks a little divine flame in there to love one another. Here's Jacob.
And Bruce, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and we'll let Jacob have the final word.
It was a pleasure, Dr. Campbell. Thank you for having us. Anytime, we'd love to, we'll keep in contact with you. We love your show. Here's Jacob.
Thank you. Jacob, you get to say the final word. Is there any word of encouragement or challenge you want to bring to us?
I would say do the list and stay with God with all you can, and also, no matter what you do, go see the movie, because it'll move you. It'll make you a better person. And I'm surprised, because God has touched it with his power. Love it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacob. And may God continue to use you and your brother and the whole family. We pray his joy to be upon you, and blessing and peace as this movie goes forth and as your ministry continues. Thank you so much for coming on the radio with us.
Thank you very much. It's been a privilege. Thank you for inviting me again.
Okay.
In just a moment, we will be interviewing a Christian movie producer who has a release coming out in June, just less than 2 months. His name is Tom Anton, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. To discover more about Beyond Words and the other ministries of Scripture Awakening, visit us on the web at scriptureawakening.com. While there, you can learn about our amazingly successful Bible reading program, B90, or Bible in 90 Days. You can review the extensive catalog of our versatile Bible study series titled Be Next. You can also download free podcasts from all Beyond Words programs. Check out B90, Be Next, and Beyond at scriptureawakening.com. Here once again is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome back to Beyond Words Radio. And we have with us a guest now, as we move from a young boy who was an actor with a supporting father to a producer, Tom Anton. And as we think more about Christian film and its message and all that it takes to make it happen, Tom, we're glad you're with us to give us much insight.
Well, thank you for having me, Bill.
Tom, if we could, let's go back a little bit to your story to let them get to know you. How did you become interested in film?
Well, it goes back to when I was literally, basically 5 years old. I saw a movie I'll never forget with my folks called To Kill a Mockingbird, and it just really spoke to me, and knew that I wanted to produce and direct films, but my career never led me down that path. I was a environmental consultant in the energy business for about 20-something years in the state of Louisiana. And having my own company, it afforded me the opportunity to start little dinner theaters, and I would write and direct plays, and it was a lot of fun. But I finally decided that I wanted to sell my business and go after my dream of making independent films. And Sandy, my wife, and I, we've written, produced, and I've directed two feature films.
What are the names of those films? Give us the status. Also, Tom, I kind of know some of the backstory, but give our listeners a sense of what's going on.
Well, the first film we did was shot in New Orleans, where I'm from, and it was called At Last. We've re-edited the film and are working on a re-release called Anything for Love. And it basically is the true story of how Sandy and I got together. When I started going to many different seminars on writing, directing, and producing, one of the current themes I heard was, do your first film on a subject matter you know and you're passionate about. And as our story developed and started coming to life, we thought it would make a good story. We were separated as kids when I grew up in Detroit and then moved to New Orleans in high school. And Sandy and I wrote letters, and somehow those letters were intercepted, and we didn't find them until 25 years later, and we found them, we fell in love, and we've been married 16 years now. So that was our first film. It was a lot of fun. And so we're in the process of, we have a great editor. We did our second film that was called The Pardon, P-A-R-D-O-N, The Pardon, and it was a story that was also shot in Louisiana. It was another true story about a young woman, Toni Jo Henry, who back in the 30s was accused of murder, and she was sentenced, was convicted, and started having appeals and got an attorney for murder. And she ended up being the last woman in the state of Louisiana that was executed. So it's her love story, her life. And one of the interesting parts of the story that attracted Sandy and I was that while she was in jail, they had no death row for women in Louisiana at that time. They kept her in a little jail cell in Lake Charles, Louisiana. She got nationwide attention. And she ended up meeting a Catholic priest who befriended her, and she was baptized the night before she was executed. And so it is a story basically of hope and redemption and her life story. So it really drew us to her. We had a great cast. Jamie King played Toni Jo. She's currently in Heart of Dixie, and she's been in a lot of movies. We had Academy Award nominee John Hawkes, Jason Lewis, T.J. Thine, who's from the TV show Bones, and we shot that in North Louisiana, and that was our second film.
And Tom, that's going to come out in theaters pretty soon, is that right?
Yes, we were picked up by a distributor called Monterey Media, and they're one of the larger independent film distributors, and they're going to have a release the end of June to the five major markets like L.A., New York, Chicago, San Francisco. And then they're going to have like a release of 30 to 40, 50 cities after that, which I'm not sure which ones they are. So I'm not sure when it's coming here and all that. But we're real excited that it finally got picked up.
And will The Pardon be available on DVD?
Yes, we'll have a VOD, Netflix, DVD, Blu-ray. That will probably come out in the fall. We'll probably do a push for that. Again, you know, once you sign up with the distributor and they pick up your film and do it, they basically call and let you know what's going on. You're not really that involved as much.
Tom, you love movies. I've known you for some years, and now you're, tell our listeners what you're doing locally here in North Carolina with movies. How are you encouraging people to love film as well?
Well, Sandy and I started 6 years ago. We had the Asheville Cinema Society, and that is where we would screen from March through November. We would screen two films a month on a Tuesday night. But this past year, we've reincorporated it. That'd be the WNC Film Society. And we're back to showing two films a month on Tuesday night at the Grace Center in Mills River. And the films we show are independent films. They're documentaries. They're independent films. The end of May, we're doing a night of shorts. And they're all different genres of films, not necessarily what I would say are Christian films, but they're films that have a good message. We've been very fortunate in dealing with the Grace Center that they've given us the ability to pick and choose our films as long as they're not over the top with violence or sex or bad language. And I know my audience, and so we show really good films, and they can go on our website, the WNC Film Society, and you can look at the trailers and look at the films we have. And we also have ratings where our audience rates the film, and we send the information back to the filmmakers. And after the screening of the movie, we usually Skype, have a live Skype with either the director or the producer, writer of the film, where they can interact with our audience and answer questions. And this is the first time we've been able to offer that, and it's been a lot of fun.
Tom, with all these years of analyzing films, writing films, producing, directing, acting for films, you've sort of taken all the different possible roles. You've got a lot of insight. What, in your mind, makes for a good Christian film?
Well, one of my problems with some of the Christian films is it's a little too in your face in terms of, it's almost like made by Christians for Christians, and the production value has not quite been there. The acting has not quite been there. So I think that's been one of the problems they've had in the past. Now, again, I think there's a need for it, and I think it's great that they are able to go after the audience they're trying to go after. But one of the things when Sandy and I sat down, we didn't really sit down to make a, quote, Christian film. It's like I want to go after the Tony Joes of the world. I feel that there's a tremendous void between the films that are made by Christians of just saying, hey, we're Christians, this is for Christians, versus, wait a minute now, let's make a really good film that has the message in there and can other people can relate to and open the door for conversation and discussion. So that's more or less the type of film that I'm interested in. There have been several good ones. Soul Surfer, I mean, is a really good example, I think, of a true story that was done. Blindside. There's some really good message films out there that are done that I feel, again, are not so in your face, because I think as being labeled a Christian filmmaker, you've automatically shut the door of going after a secular market. And I'm really interested in that secular market. It's almost as in Jesus said, you know, I'm not so interested in the ones that have been saved. I want to go after the ones that have not been saved.
That's good, Tom. So part of what you're saying then is if Christian is real to life, then a Christian film, that also should feel, touch, taste, it should feel like real life, not something artificial, forced, contrived.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think that there can be little different messages in all different kinds of things. Well, one of the interesting parts of the Grace Center is we attended a couple services there, and they had used clips from television shows and movies in their sermon. And you never would have thought that they would take a clip from this show, but it had a good message. It had a good statement on faith. It had a good statement on, you know, how it was good and how it was going to affect people's lives. And I was just, it really spoke to me. And so I think we're in the process of, we've got a couple films we're working on right now. And again, they're not going to be labeled as Christian films, but it's going to have an element that has a faith message somewhere in there that I think the audience will see and take to heart. So hopefully, as I was listening to your interview earlier, that they want to touch people, and that's a good message and a good film that this little boy was in and is touching people. And I think that's great. I think that if a film can do that, I think that's great. I think that's, you know, entertainment. Films are another mode of entertainment, and it can be used. The media can use it for good or for bad. We see that every day. And I like to see good things, and I like good movies. And not all movies are that way, but there are certain movies that have a message that will come across that when you leave, you start thinking about it.
You mentioned in your early years being touched by To Kill a Mockingbird. And I'm just finishing a book for a woman who will come on the radio on our program, who came out of the Islamic faith. And one thing that touched her was Les Miserables, you know, reading the book as a young girl. And it's just like these stories that really portray life in a deepest level touch us, don't they?
Yes, yes. You know, we just showed a film. The film that we did on our last Tuesday showing was called Under the Same Sun. It was a very fascinating, independent foreign film, and it was by an Israeli director and a Palestinian producer. And it was about two men. It was a fictional story, but it was set in Israel and Palestine. And it was done with two gentlemen, each of their own faith, that wanted to bring solar power to the West Bank and to areas that did not have electricity. And it showed their problem and their struggle of dealing with their own family members. The Palestinians would not back him or help him because he was dealing with a Jew, with an Israeli, and the Israeli, because he was dealing with an Arab, did not want anything to do with him. And it showed their struggle over, you know, centuries of this that goes way back. But in the end, they prevailed through a young generation and through the means of using Facebook to get support that this was a win-win situation for everybody. And it was a real touching film. So, you know, I'm not going to say that's a Christian film at all, but the message of getting along and hope and love in these two men against all odds and against their families brought together. And in the film, it just it had a great ending, and it was a good story. We had a great discussion afterward with our audience.
Films can show us parts of life we don't understand. And I remember, Tom, the last time you gave me a gift, it was a book. You wanted me to read Ted Decker's Tea with Hezbollah. And has that been made into a movie, do you know?
No, I don't.
I don't know. I doubt it has. I haven't heard of that. But the book itself is there. And it's a book can do the same thing, but it just gives you a picture into another culture, another way of thinking about the world.
Yes.
And it's something that should happen to make us whole people, to help us appreciate the people of the world we're called to love, and for Christians to bring the message of God's life and love to them. We need to understand that.
You know, there's a series of books that it's written by an author named Daniel Silva, and this is going to sound terrible, but the messages that are in this book are incredible. He basically, his life is, he's a Jew. His father, it's all fiction, was killed at Auschwitz. His mother survived, and he went on to become a world-renowned restorer of art and goes into churches and is friends with the Pope and does these Monets and Degas and Michelangelo, all these great paintings, and how he restores them. But he's also an assassin for Mossad of people that are suicide bombers and attempted people that go after. And how this author has interwoven this man's faith of being a Jewish freedom fighter, but at the same time having a love for Christians and again, a close personal relationship with the Pope and other Christian and churches of all different denominations, how he restores these arts. It's fascinating, and there's a message. Again, there's some violence in it, and it's not for everybody, but there's a message in there, and it is a message of hope and love and getting along and how the different faiths can work together for good. And it's really interesting. And Ted Decker has done the same thing with, like you mentioned, with his books. He's got some really great books out there that take it an interesting way of looking at life and doing real stories and tying it in there. And those are kind of the ones that appeal to me.
Tom, if you don't mind, I'm now going to push us in a different direction. Many of us would be curious to ask you, what is it like to produce and direct a film? I mean, that must be awesome. It must take everything you've got.
You know, it does. I love it. Being the director on the film, you basically set the pace, and I love it. We had 145 crew members on our last film. It was very interesting because it was a period piece in the 30s. So we had 150 cars from the 30s. Half of them didn't run, so those are the ones we parked and towed in the street. We had 500 extras. We had the clothes from the 30s. And it was a real challenge, but it was a lot of fun. And just being on a set and the energy level and the excitement as a director, you're pulled in 9 million directions a day, and I just love it. I working with actors, I enjoy it, and the crew. And we had a fantastic editor on our last film, Blair Daly, who basically is going to be moving to the area now. He lives in Connecticut. He had worked with Barry Levinson on most of his films, Rain Man, Wag the Dog, Good Morning Vietnam, and Bugsy, all these great movies. And he edited our last film, and we're going to be working together on all future projects, and to have someone of that caliber was a lot of fun. So there's so much talent out there, and I think if you bring them all together and as a director, you're on the set, and it's fascinating. I can't even explain it. I just love it. And Sandy is the main writer of our group. I mean, we talk about story, but Sandy really writes the scripts, and she's got a tremendous sense of dialogue and structure, and so we work together on that. So having my wife, well, we're together doing that, and then all of our friends that we've come together has just been just so much fun.
Wow.
It's a challenge. There's a lot of, things can go wrong, and you've got to be open to that. But we try to make it as collaborative an enterprise as we can, and dealing with the actors and the crew. So it's a lot of fun.
Indiana, a great challenge, of course, is to be able to keep going, and you can't if you don't make enough money for the next one, or if you find yourself in a bottomless pit of debt, you're sunk. And so there goes, once you've produced something, you've got to market it, and you've got to have funding. And what did it cost, if you're okay talking about it, what did it cost to...
For someone to invest in a film, I think for the independent films, the marketing has changed in terms of... There's been so many different things that have happened that it's now much more accessible for independent filmmakers to get their film into a theater. In the past, the cost of making a 35-millimeter reel was just prohibitive for most small independent films. Now, with the onset of DCP, the digital age, we're able to do that. As an example, the Regal and even the Epic Theater there in Hendersonville, they do not have 35-millimeter films anymore. It's all digital. So now an independent filmmaker has the ability to get their film in if it's good. So a theater owner will be more accessible to showing independent films if it's a good story. You can have the best cast and the most expensive film in the world, and if no one's going to go see it, the theater's not going to make any money. So they've been much more receptive to independent films coming. And we have places like the Fine Arts and in Asheville, like Carolina, and Brevard, we have the little theater here, the Coed, and they show big films, but then every now and then they'll show some independent films. And so I think that has changed. And I think if you keep your budget down, and by that I'm saying basically under $10 million, if you can keep your budget pretty much under $10 million, and you have, again, you got to have a good story and a good cast, that there's an opportunity to make some money, and you can do that. But everything's a risk. It's a very risky business. When I go after raising money, it's always telling people, there's a chance, but here's how, as a, I ran a successful business for a number of years, and so I know the business side of filmmaking. I studied that for about 10 years before I made my first film. I wanted to know the ins and outs of foreign distribution, DVD sales, now VOD and Netflix. And so there's lots of different opportunities to get your film out there. But, it's a difficult challenge. A lot of people, again, I think the bad side of all this digital age is there's a lot of people out there making movies that I don't think should be making movies. But, I say, God bless them. Hey, go after it. But if you saw some of the submissions we get, oh, my goodness, but it all starts with passion, too. I think if you have the passion, I think that's where Sandy and I have been very fortunate to get the cast and the crew and the people interested, is that I want to make this fun. Yeah, I've heard so many stories from my crew members of how horrible the experience was making a film, and I'm not going to be that way. I want everyone to leave and say I had a blast making that movie, and that's kind of our outlook.
That's great, great. I think for all of us, it's a really good philosophy. If you can't have fun and enjoy what you're doing, you're probably, first of all, taking yourself too seriously.
Right.
You know, because there is no perfect person out there, and we don't have to try to be that way, and that's often where the fun disappears when we're trying to reach perfection. And secondly, maybe we're not trusting God, that God has a reason for everything in life, and he can use even the hard times for good, and he knows what he's doing. He's got us in a place for a purpose. So here you are making films, and the world is changing around us. We find newspapers closing their doors because of, as we say, the digital internet age. What's happening to the movie theater with all these changes of technology?
You know, it's changing so rapidly. Again, I feel that the opportunity for independent filmmakers, again, if you have a good film, that there's an opportunity to get out there. There's some really great independent distributors, and anybody that has a film and makes a film, this is the hardest thing to do, is to do your best to try to get a distribution deal before you get your film made. That's very difficult to do.
I understand there are still even more opportunities for the independent filmmaker. We look at theaters and we think, hey, I can make my home a theater. I've, with all this technology, DVDs, as you say, Netflix, VOD, it's just all there for me. I don't need to go into a movie theater. And what you're doing, you're producing feature films. You're telling people a lot of what happens here depends on you showing up, buying a ticket, sitting down in a theater. How's that part of it going? Has there been a dramatic decline in theater attendance over the last couple of years or not?
You know, there has been, but then this year Regal is up. So, you know, I think there again it depends on the film. For the independent filmmaker, not the big blockbusters that you're going to see like American Sniper that made $300 million or whatever, those type of films are always going to be there. But for the independent filmmaker, to get a little small, wide release theatrically basically just boosts you up to get DVD sales, and that's where the money is. The money is made in DVD, Blu-ray. The theater helps drive that, and the foreign market is a tremendous market for independent films of making your money back. So when you get a little bit of a domestic release, then the foreign films take a look at that, the foreign cities and distributors, and then you make some money back from that. So I think for the small independent film to get into a big theater and get out, we were very fortunate. I don't know. I mean, again, I give it all to God. It was his film and his design with what's going to happen with our movies, but we were fortunate enough that we had a champion, and I think you've got to, once you have a film, you've got to find someone that can champion your film to get out there. I don't really, to be honest, want to be involved anymore in making a film without an upfront distribution deal, and we have this on our next film. So we have a distributor. Excellent. Before we've even started making the film, we now know someone's going to distribute it. So that's huge. That just, now you know your film's going to out there. I can't tell you the number of filmmakers I know that made a wonderful little film, it never got picked up and nobody can see it. You know, it's a shame, and that happens all the time. So it's tough to do, but I think now, I think that's where I am at this point in my filmmaking career, is I just only want to step on a set once there is a distribution deal in place. But for me, I mean, that's how I feel.
Well, Tom, you're in a wonderful position. You've worked hard for many years. You literally put your business on the line, everything on the line, to go after your passions and to obey what you felt was God's call in your life. Okay, so the pardon's coming out, and we want to encourage people to look for that, see if it's going to be near to you. If you're not in one of these five or six major distribution areas, it'll go out in towns, in cities. What is the message that we should take from the pardon?
I think it's a message of hope and redemption. One of the problems we had with the film with some of the Christian distributors was there actually is, it's PG-13, there's no nudity, there's no bad language, but there were some scenes. We were in a brothel. We don't show any nudity or any sex, but we're in a brothel, and some of the Christian distributors were upset that we were in a brothel. The young woman, Tony Jo, was a drug addict. We reference her drug addict, but we don't actually see her shooting drugs, but you know that that's what she's doing. And I think we've got, in my opinion, they said, you know, you can't show that, but you got to show the sin. I think we all all sin. And I think in showing this woman's sin and then showing how she came to God and how she met this priest and resisted him and resisted anything about wanting to know about religion, and how he did it through love and kindness and just basically became her friend, no matter who she was or what she had done, that she was God's child. And he spoke to her, and she heard these words, and it affected her. And so I think that's the message that I hope the film has, is that there's hope for all of us.
You know, Tom, some of the greatest novels, classic, going back to days when we'd never talk about these things in public, you know, sinful people. And yet we have this truth you're bringing out, that you've got to show the darkness to bring out the light. The message doesn't seem real if you don't show real people. Why is it difficult for Christians to accept this kind of thing on the screen, but they'll read it in elementary school, classic, they'll read the texts as youngsters and say it's okay?
I don't know. I have no clue. I honestly don't. You know, it was a struggle that Sandy and I had in dealing with different organizations of them being so resistant. I think the message was there, and I think the response we had from test audiences, that they saw it for what it was. And again, that's just my personal opinion toward a lot of the Christian film industry, is that they just, I don't feel that they're being open to the people that are non-Christians. They're missing something. I really feel that way. And there's a tremendous market out there. And so that's why I think a lot of the Christian films do well. They, you know, I had a friend of mine in L.A. that basically said that Christian film was like pornography. And I said, excuse me?
Huh.
He basically said, well, he said, it's a bad story, bad acting, but you're playing toward a select audience, and you've got your audience already. They're already going to come see it. Because of the message and what's in there, no matter how bad it is. Oh, it's a message. It's got a Christian film. You can go see this. And he said they've done a disservice. And I feel that way, because the friends that some of the Christian films, I'm not going to say which ones that I've gone to see, that I know the non-Christian friends of mine would walk out of the film. They wouldn't enjoy it. They wouldn't see it. They wouldn't get the message because of the way it was handled.
Yeah.
So, but again, there's a need for that. There's a place for that, and I wish them well, and they're doing it, but that's not the type of film I'm interested in.
And, Tom, I also thank you that you've been walking that line. If some of the Christian world's saying, shame on you, you've got almost all of Hollywood saying, shame on you. There's not enough dirt, not enough sex, there's no gay actor, all this. And you're walking a line trying to really bring the message out to the world. Thank you, and thank you for being on the air, Tom.
Well, thank you for having me. I certainly appreciate it, and I've enjoyed our friendship, and enjoy your show.
Have a great day, and God bless.
You too. Thank you.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. And Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. Visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com, where you can download free podcasts of all Beyond Words programs.